Shalom, this is Alex Israel, recording this podcast for Yeshivat Eretz Hatzvi. And today we're going to talk about Shlishi and Revi'i in Parshat Korach. The Korach rebellion really refuses to die down. After all, we've already had the 250 Makrivei HaKetoret who have been burnt, Datan Aviram who have been swallowed up. It's not clear with which group Korach was killed. Chazal say that he was both swallowed up and burnt. But what continues after this in Perek Yud Zayin is a whole series of aftershocks and a sense that the rebellion, Hashem's trying to stop it, but it sort of has this unbelievable momentum which makes it not be able to die down. And let me try and explain what I mean. Perek Yud Zayin begins immediately after the earth has swallowed up Korach's men, Datan Aviram. It begins with the order to take the fire pans and to make them a covering for the Mizbeach. V'yareim et hamachdot mibein ha-srefa, v'ta'esh zreihala ki kadeshu. Get rid of all the fire, pick up the fire pans, and take the fire pans and make them a covering for the Mizbeach. These fire pans made out of copper, the Mizbeach itself is copper, and this will be a zikaron livnei Yisrael, a memorial to Bnei Yisrael, leman asher lo yikrav ish zar, that nobody foreign, asher lo mizera Aharon, not from Aharon's seed, not from Aharon's descendants, will come to bring Ketoret again. This is a sign, a zikaron, a bit like tzitzit or other signs that we have, which are meant to remind people, look, the Mizbeach is Mizbeach, by the way, every Israelite is allowed to approach. But when you see the Mizbeach with its copper covering, you'll remember the rebels of Korach, and you won't presume that you can become a Kohen, you won't presume that you can bring Ketoret. This is meant to be an educational moment, but the people are still in a state of rebellion, because what happens immediately afterwards, you can see it in Pasuk Vav, is it says, and Vayilonu klad up in Israel mi mochorat. The people all railed against Moshe and Aaron and said, Atem hamitem et am Hashem. You have brought death against God's people. Suddenly what follows is an immediate plague, and Aaron takes out the Ketoret ve'amod ben amitim u'ben achayim. Chazal point out that it is not the Ketoret which kills. The Ketoret killed the sinners, but the Ketoret will save the people. Aaron takes the incense, he stands between the dead and between the living, and he stops the plague. Okay, so this is a second sign. The Ketoret is not bad, it's the people who are bad. We have the covering for the Mizbeach, which is also going to remind people. And yet, it still doesn't die down. Even after this, Hashem has another sign to give to Bnei Yisrael. And this sign is when Moshe takes all of the staffs from each of the leaders of the tribes, from each of the Nesiim, and he puts them all into the Kodesh, into the Ol Moed, the Tent of Meeting. And he says that whoever is the chosen one, his staff will sprout as if his tree is alive. And the explicit motive here is V'hashikoti me'alai etulot b'nei Yisrael asheheim belinim aleichem. I will rid myself of the incessant complaints of b'nei Yisrael against you. And this is exactly what they do. Each of the Nesiim, each give in their staff. And of course, the next day, they bring them all out. V'hine parach matei Aharon lebeit Levi, v'yotzei perach, v'yotzei tzitz, v'yigmol shkedim. And Aaron's staff has produced flowers and produced tzitz. It has brought blossoms and actually produced almonds. It's an almond staff from an almond tree. And Moshe brings them all out. And of course, this is meant to be an absolute proof from Hashem that that Aaron has been chosen as the leader of the tribe of Levi, and there shouldn't be any more complaints. And of course, Hashem says to Moshe, put the Mateh Aharon back into the Ol Moed, and it will be a sign to future rebels so that their complaints against me will cease. So we've had three different types of signs. One should be the fire pans on the side of the Mizbeach. The second, the Ketoret itself, which is there to save the people, not to accuse the people. And now the Mateh Aharon, the staff of all the leaders, where it's Aaron's staff, which out of all of them, flowers. So is it over yet? Actually, it's not. If you look at the first the last line of Perek Yud Zayin, this is what the people say. But as the Israelites said to Moses, we perish, we're lost, all of us is lost. Everyone who ventures near the Lord's tabernacle will die. We're all doomed to perish. Hein gavanu avadnu kulanu avadnu. Kol hakarev hakarev al mishkan Hashem yamut. Ha'im tamnu ligvoa. And that last ringing line, Ha'im tamnu ligvoa, are we ever going to stop dying? Is this sort of ringing, enduring line, which means that there's just this sense of disgruntlement which never goes away. What are we going to do with this? I want to offer two possibilities. One is that it's a no-win situation. I mean, if we were stuck in the Midbar for an entire generation, for 40 years, to a sort of future which meant that we would simply die in the rocky hills of the Sinai Desert, and our children would be able to go into the land, we also might feel very, very deflated. It could be that we can't ask much more from Bnei Israel, and we can't really request much more from them other than be understanding that this is a very, very bleak situation and that there are going to be complaints. It's interesting that at this point in Sefer Bamidbar, Chazal points out that Nevuah ends, and Nevuah sort of takes a hiatus for 38 years and only returns in the 40th year, where they're going to sort of embark on their second mission to Eretz Yisrael. We're talking about in chapter 20 of Parsha Chukat, and that there's sort of 38 years of radio silence from God. In other words, God said, okay, yalla, there's nothing to be done. This generation, they're going to have to just sit it out. And therefore, really, it might be a sort of a very depressing situation with very, very little hope. And maybe we won't have any rebellion. God has used all his firepower to ensure that nobody will engage in a revolt or a mutiny or try and remove the leadership. But we really can't expect there to be a particularly upbeat mood in the camp. And that's one possibility. But I'd like to suggest a different one. Possibly the reason why Korach's rebellion refuses to die down is because Korach actually has a good point. Korach argues, Ki kol ha'ida kulam kudoshim uvatocham Hashem, that all the people are holy. And he is correct. It's interesting that later in our literature, we have a famous statement by the Rambam in Hilchot Talmud Torah that there are three crowns of Judaism. There is the Keter Malchut, the crown of the monarchy, which is only for David and his seed. There is the crown of Kehuna, Keter Kehuna, which is only for Aaron and his progeny. But Keter Torah belongs to everybody. This was a great source of controversy in Second Temple times, because we all know that in Sefer Devarim, the Beit Din HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, is refers to as HaKohanim HaHalviim Ve'el HaShofet Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahem, the priests, the Levites, and the judges. And some priests felt that the only people who could rule in Jewish law were people who were from the tribe of Levi, or who were Kohanim. The rabbis came back and said that Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz, even if you are a Kohen Gadol, a high priest, but if you are an Am Haaretz, a Mamzer Talmid Chacham will be greater than that. Even a Talmid Chacham, a learned person of the most dubious heritage, the most dubious lineage, will be greater than that. What they meant by that was there was a battle for access to Torah. There was a battle to say that the Keter Torah should belong to everybody. And in a certain sense, this egalitarianism which Korach is proposing, and I think it's something which in a modern Western context we relate to a lot. Our Western societies believe in equal opportunities. They don't believe in discrimination depending on a person's birth, and therefore whatever race or whatever color or whatever gender or whatever it might be, everybody is expected to have equal opportunities. And the notion of somebody chosen by God, even the notion of the Kohanim, Bnei Aharon, is a sort of foreign one. And because this idea of egalitarianism is so strong, it might be that what Korach bequeathed to us, the reason why Korach didn't die down is because he had a really important point. And you know who takes up that point eventually? It is exactly Chazal who take up that point when they say that anybody who learns Torah, that indeed a Talmid Chacham Mamzer is greater than a Kohen Gadol Am Haaretz. That everybody has access. It is true, not everybody has access to Malchut. Not everybody has access to Kahuna. But everybody has access to Torah. So if you want, that became almost like a healing for the Korach spirit. When I think about Korach's rebellion, I sometimes think about Animal Farm, because Korach comes along with this statement of equality, fighting against the leadership, but of course ends up, like in Animal Farm, saying that all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. In other words, Korach is rebelling against the existent authority, the existent leadership, but he really wants leadership for himself. And this is why Chazal come along and say that this is a machloket shelo l'shem shamayim. This is not an argument with pure motives. This is an argument with impure motives. And yet, as I've tried to point out, there could be two causes for why this rebellion simply fails to die down and really fails to be stamped out in the pages of Parashat Korach. One, because the people are just so deflated. But the other option is that there really is something in the Korach argument which is Sofo Lehitkayem, which has a very, very good point. And in the end, this was applied to the area of Talmud Torah, where we all have access, where we all have the ability to steig in the Beit Midrash, to really work hard and to eventually become a Talmud Chacham, and thereby to be able to lead in the world of Limud Torah. Thank you very much. Have a great day.